Sticking around for the last session of the day. I know your brains might be full. So we're going to go ahead and tackle a really dense topic that's kind of controversial, just to make sure that we top off the full brains. My name is Deb Nicholson. I am the Director of Community Outreach at the Open Invention Network.
I'm Simon Phipps, and I advise the Open Invention Network, but I'm also the President of the Open Source Initiative.
So what we're going to talk about today is a developer response to software patents and a global response. So this is not an activist response. This is not what sort of policy should we set to change this. This is what we as developers can do to ameliorate risk for software patent suits on our projects today. I'd love to see another talk on how we get rid of them altogether, but that's not going to be this talk. So we're going to go through, first, why we're a problem, and second, why anyone in Brazil should care, and then lastly, the happy ending, what we think you can do about this. So I'm going to go ahead.
Click.
And, oh, that was this. Okay. Why are patents a problem?
Okay, thank you. So, patents have been with us for many years. We had a society a long time ago when Brazil was first founded that did not have any need for software patents because it was a society of monarchs and it was a largely a feudal society. And after that age ended, we found ourselves in an industrial age. In the industrial age, the way that the world works is there are central control points. There are places where things are made. There are the means of production in factories. There are the ways things are distributed through roads and rail and canals and shipping. There are the ways that communication take place. Each of these things has a natural limit to how many of them there can be, and consequently, they become control points for production and for commerce. And in the age of those control points became heavily contended. And governments in many countries introduced ways of preventing fighting between businesses over control points. They introduced rules about ownership of things that were made, rules around copyright. They introduced rules about who would have the right to exploit new inventions. Those were patents. And they introduced rules about who could use the name of things. Those were trademarks. And in this industrial age, where there were natural control points, that it was okay for people to maintain and develop, those rules about copyrights and trademarks and patents were quite reasonable rules. But then there was a change, quite a recent change in society, where we moved on from a world of control points and moved into a world of networks. Where wherever you were in the world, you were automatically a peer of people somewhere else in the world. So this is a Telecentro in Sao Paulo, and the people in this room are quite capable of directly working with people anywhere else in the world. They can have one-to-one relationships with those people. And that means there are no natural restrictions, no natural control points in the world of the internet. And consequently, there is no need for the government to determine which individuals can have a monopoly over production, or a monopoly over communication, or a monopoly over distribution. Because in the internet age, everybody is equally connected to everyone else, if they want to be. Unfortunately, we're left in a world where those old rules about the industrial society still exist, where there are still companies who believe they are entitled to control production and distribution and monetization. And so the old rules about copyrights and patents and trademarks are being used not to fairly divide the market between equal companies, but rather they're being used by the winners of the previous era to try and seize control of the current era. And because of that, we're now beginning to have problems with, particularly with patents, that we have never had before. Problems that result not because patents have always been a bad idea, but because in a meshed society, in a society of internet connections, where everybody is potentially equal to everybody else, there are no natural control points, and therefore there is no need for rules that decide who can control those control points. Now, as time has gone by, the rules around patents have got increasingly crazy. We've increasingly seen, particularly in the USA, the rules around patents extended beyond even the ideas of the industrial society. So Deb is going to talk us through some of the excitement that has arisen in the United States as a result of these out-of-date patent ideas being extended.
You mean excitement in the Confucian sense, I assume?
Yes.
Okay. So what happened in... a British one. The Americans definitely are winning on volume, but the British were there first.
As you would expect.
Right. So that's memory management of the simplex algorithm. And you start to see the beginning of where we're going wrong. As Simon pointed out, patents originally were created to refer to physical objects. And so they're not meant or intended for abstract ideas like math or software or business methods. So this one is, it's an algorithm, but it's on some type of a device. And so someone looked at that and thought, well, the package deal of an abstract idea plus a physical device, that sounds like a thing you can touch. Okay, you can have a patent for it. We famously in the US in the 1970s, the pharmaceutical industry really honed patent applications and really figured out how to get them to be the broadest, vaguest, so that they would be still useful to that industry 20 years after they were issued. In 1998, the Federal Circuit in the U.S. affirmed the patentability of business methods, and this opens up a huge can of worms as far as patenting an abstract idea. Are people familiar with a business method? Sort of. It's basically if you have an idea of how you could run a more successful business. It's supposed to be more complex than a thing you could do on pencil and paper, but you might use it to control risk management or, you know, track compound interest or something like that on a computer. So you, again, have the abstract idea plus the physical device. 1999, the single-click patent is issued. Do people remember that one? Amazon said, every time you click once and go right to the shopping cart, we want royalties for that. So you can see that it wasn't very long after we opened it up to abstract ideas that we're getting some very abstract ideas about what ought to be patentable. Fast forward, not very far at all. Lawsuits by non-practicing entities and other software companies increases fivefold between 2004 and 2010. So that's, well, gross. But we'll go into more detail about why and how in a bit. Simon is going to tell a story.
So this all sounds, you know, fascinating stuff about software patents. But you then ask yourself, in a world of free and open source software, you know, why do we care about software patents being filed? Software patents are a crazy bad thing that has happened in America, not because Congress made a law that said that they should happen, but because of case law, because the courts have gradually allowed them to happen. But in open source software, well, surely nothing this bad can happen. Well, I used to work for a big American corporation, a company called IBM, And the way at IBM that we used to pay for our Christmas gifts for our family was by filing patents, because IBM paid us about $500 every time we went and filed a patent on an idea from our work. We were constantly encouraged, as we did our work, to file patents in parallel with the work that we were doing. So I would look at what we did yesterday, I would try and work out an idea, and I would file a patent. And then the next week, I would look at the work we had done, and I would find another idea and file another patent. And the next week, I'd do the same thing and file another patent. And in parallel with my work, IBM incented me to file patents on everything I did. Now, when they were encouraging me to file these patents, it was actually a very easy thing to do. All I would do is send an email message to a lawyer within the company with a rough statement of my idea. And that lawyer would come back to me about a week later with maybe 10 pages of description of the thing that I had suggested. And the description wouldn't describe my idea. It wouldn't describe it in a way that you would be able to implement the thing that I had invented. No. The description would contain a list of ways that a patent attorney could find out whether somebody else had copied the idea. And that was what was then filed as the patent. What was filed as the patent was not my idea made public, but rather what was filed was a list of claims that a patent attorney could use to determine whether my idea had been used by somebody else. My idea was not really put into the public domain. What actually happened was my idea was put behind metal bars. And this process of parallel filing goes on the whole time in big corporations from America. The employees that you meet in free software communities may well be incented to be filing patents on the work that they are doing today. And they want to do it because they'll be being paid money that pays for Christmas. So the filing of patents is a constant problem. It is something that goes on the whole time. You'll be shocked, I think, to find out just how much software patent filing is going on. Deb, scare us.
The U.S. Patent Office is granting about 40,000 new software patents each year. That's up from maybe 10 years ago, it's about 10,000, and if you go back 20 years ago, it's about 5,000 per year. So that's the point of granting these patents is supposedly to spur innovation. I don't think anyone here in this room believes that that is what is happening. And as Simon pointed out, it's not actually growing the sum of human knowledge about how software can be written. If these were 40,000 new awesome ideas that we could go and read on a public website, maybe we would put up with some inconvenience for that great store of knowledge. That's not what's happening, though. In addition to a lot of broad, vague, poorly written, well written for lawyers, poorly written for developers, patents being granted each year, the U.S. Patent and Trade Office continues to be underfunded. So it means that they are handling more volume on the same money, which means they take even less time to look at the patents that they're granting. So with the keeping in mind the nebulous idea of software patent quality, if there is such a thing, it is surely declining and not increasing. And so next, I think you're going to lay out some realities.
Okay. So to sum up some of these realities for you about software patents, first of all, it doesn't matter where in the world you live. I've spoken about software patents here at FISLE before, and I've had members of the audience say to me, "Oh, we don't care. There are no software patents in Brazil. We don't care about this." Well, we're going to tell you in a minute why you should care. Because software patents are real internationally. They are real despite laws that say that software as such cannot be patented, because people make what are called functional claims. That is to say, they say that this idea is taking a physical computer and then. So patents are often phrased using the expression a computer which. A computer which runs this piece of software. And because the patent starts with a physical device, it's therefore allowed to be filed, even though the patent is all about software. Because the patent starts with those weasel words, a computer which, the patent is allowed to come into existence. It's possible that these patents are invalid in many countries, but the difficulty is that a patent suit doesn't start by somebody taking you to court. It starts by them sending you a letter and threatening to take you to court. Now, what do you do when you get a threatening letter and you are a free software developer working for a small business in a small town? Do you immediately say to yourself, yes, we will go to court and we will have a lawsuit against Microsoft? Is that the first response? I don't think it is. Your first response is to sign the NDA that came with the letter and to pay them the money that they're demanding, because you don't want to be the test case that goes to court first to find out whether these software patents really are real. They cause problems everywhere because of this. Because they exist, because they are based on functional claims, because the way that they are exercised is by threat rather than by actual legal action, they cause problems everywhere. As I've said, they even show up in open source software, and they also show up as anti-competitive weapons. You will have recently seen Oracle attempting a patent suit against Google over Android. And the reason they did that was to try and disrupt Google's business. They were using the patents not to get compensation for innovation, but rather they were using them as an anti-competitive weapon to attack a competitor that was performing better than them in the market. So dealing with software patents has become a major driver in policy making. At OSI, we now encourage anyone who is going to develop software under a free and open source license to use modern open source licenses with patent language in them because of this. There's then another problem which is arising, and this other problem that's arising is there are companies out there whose business models are, shall we say, predatory. This is an intellectual vulture, and he's named after, there is actually a company in the US that Deb is going to talk about politely in a minute, but I don't have to be polite about them. Their company is called Intellectual Ventures, and they exist in order to extract money out of you with threats of legal action over patents. I prefer to call them intellectual vultures. And Deb is going to tell us about the problem that intellectual vultures are causing us.
I don't actually have to be polite. It's a bleed over from the academic papers I read. This is, you have publications by a few of the most active collectors in the world. The edges of this maybe their goals are, aside from money. One of these companies has former Microsoft staff, I think Acacia Technology, and they insist that's got nothing to do with what they're doing today. I don't know if I believe them. Intellectual Ventures, that number is a huge range because they are absolutely amazing at being secretive. They really kind of make the NSA look like bumbling fools as far as the secrecy. There's a fantastic story. There's a number of different shell corporations contained within Intellectual Ventures. Nathan Mervold, the man who owns that company, sits on the board at a number of other companies. And one of his shell corporations sent one of those letters that no one wants to get to a company he sits on the board of. A journalist noticed that and wrote a story about it and said, gosh, you know, it looks like Nathan Mervold has actually sued himself. That company was quietly dropped from the case about a week later. So we're the system shell corporations in at Intellectual Ventures. And sadly, this I'd like in on that. So they received. What's about 10% of the money is what they get back. So we, but if you if honest someone had jobs, it is that is not the case. The $80 billion is dropped on the floor. $8 billion is recouped by Intellectual Ventures. So we're losing revenue, we're losing opportunities, we're losing places where we can innovate. And those things never come to market, we never see them.
So is this getting worse, Deb?
It is getting worse. It's like you're looking at my slides.
Yeah.
Unless we see a serious policy change, that's not gonna, nothing is gonna slow that down. And there's a lot of money. Money really talks in the US. So we have this group of people that we elect and we think that they do something for us. We call them Congress. They don't really, but they may be considering some policy changes to rein in the troll, patent troll problem. We'll see, but that's not the only problem.
Yes. So, you know, there are hidden threats everywhere. This, by the way, is the gratuitous cat slide because every presentation should have a cat in it somewhere. There are hidden threats all over the place. We were talking with Richard Stallman about this presentation earlier, and he wanted us to make absolutely sure that we said that there are no good software patents. The problem is not patent trolls are bad, but other people are using software patents for good. There are no good software patents. It's just that there are some users of software patents who are worse than others. They are all bad. It's just some are really downright evil, and some are just bad. You'll find that the threat from patents is all over the place, and that's the reason why you should care about it here in Brazil. Why should anyone in Brazil care about software patents? After all, you don't have software patents here. Well, we're going to give you some reasons why we think you should care about software patents in Brazil, even though you don't seem to have software patents. The first reason that you should care is, well, you might have software patents. Are you sure you don't have software patents? When you get that letter at work from Intellectual Ventures saying that you are infringing on 20 of their patents and you owe them 20 billion reais, what are you going to do about it? Are you just going to write a red line through it and say, forget this? Are you going to risk that there might be another letter that's calling you to court? Are you going to risk that you won't be able to take a vacation in America because you'll get arrested when you try and go into the country because the lawsuit is waiting for you? Do you want to be the person that tests this? And the answer is obviously you don't want to be the person that tests this. Gaining certainty about the extent to which software patents really affect the lives of ordinary Brazilians is a difficult and costly thing. When we're thinking about legal issues as free software users and advocates, we often believe that the law is like computer code, that you can compile it, and at the end, you get a definite result. But unfortunately, the law does not compile without warnings. There are always warnings of various levels when you are trying to compile the law. And resolving those warnings involves cost and time and effort. And I believe that you do not want to be the person that has to deal with a letter from Intellectual Ventures in Brazil. Deb. That's a good slide.
There
was originally a
photograph. This is the recent slide. Maybe this one was patented and got
named. It could be.
It's possible. If people are familiar with the where Microsoft sued TomTom for the file allocation tables in the Linux kernel, do people remember that suit? So. That's the exciting invention where you sometimes use the short name of a file and sometimes use the long name. Really innovative breakthrough, of course. But the fallout from that is that Linux kernel developers, who I'm sure have lots and lots of time on their hands and nothing else better they could do, ended up spending time working around the file allocation table patent just in case, so they would not also get the letter. There are other problems for us as proponents of free software. There are things that are not included in GNU Linux distributions because they are patent encumbered. Has anyone tried to run video on their install? It's you have to go get something. You can't do it out of the box because there are problems with video codecs, unless it's your own video, of course. There used to be problems with fonts, the anti-aliasing, which was it was a patent encumbered technology where it made fonts look nice and smooth on the page, so that when you said to your friend, like, oh, remember that great operating system I've been telling you about that respects your freedom? I can't wait to show it to you. So you open it up and all the fonts look really crufty, and so the first impression that they have is like, huh, so it's kind of like Windows. Fonts look crummy? Not the best first impression. So I would argue that software patents are a problem, even if you for us as free software users and proponents, it's non-ideal. In addition, there's what we call fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Because there are problems with patents and makes them wary of buying software or using software from a smaller company that doesn't have a patent portfolio. Because what patent trolls are doing is increasingly suing the users of software. So not individual users like you and I at our house when we're just writing a letter to a friend or whatever. But if you set up nice business software for a company, then they might get sued for using a database or using the web content management system that you set up for them. And they're very expert at figuring out the smallest amount or the largest amount that will still seem reasonable rather than looking into it further. So when this happens, it creates an impact where people are afraid to use software that doesn't come from a company that has a giant patent portfolio. So this is bad. So we don't want to see that. We came out where the target has been startups in some places, yep. And I'm going to pass it back to Simon to talk about a Brazilian startup.
Thank you. So this is a Brazilian company. Was started by Bruno Souza from Sal Java, and he's doing quite well with this company. So this is a Brazilian startup owned by Brazilian people, but Bruno doesn't want this company to only have customers in Brazil, because what Tools Cloud do is they provide a complete development environment in the cloud so that you can spin up a development team with tracking tools, with continuous integration, with continuous build. You can just go to their website, click, and have a complete development environment for your full team instantly available to you. You'll see, if you look at that chart, he has every tool that you can imagine in the complete development cycle in the cloud. That means that any software patent that you can possibly think of probably reads on his company. And that means that as he has gone into the US to try and gain customers, he has realized that he is exposed to risk. It's gone even further than that for Tools Cloud. Because Tools Cloud has done quite well, Bruno decided to reincorporate the company in America so that it's now a Brazilian-owned American company. And that means that actually he's fully covered now by U.S. law, which has software patents. He lives in Brazil. It's a Brazilian-owned company, but it's now based in the U.S. And I believe you should care about software patents because I think that you will want to do the same thing. You will want to start Brazilian companies that have international customers. You will want to start Brazilian companies that have offices or branches or ownership abroad in other countries. And when you do that, you'll leave the safe haven of a country with no software patents, and you'll become people who are part of a country that does have software patents. In fact, I put that statement even more widely than just for startup companies. Open source communities are international things. And there are always some contributors to every project who live in jurisdictions where the law is different to yours. And you will have to take into account their needs as well as yours. So the reasons why you should care here in Brazil about software patents, well, the first one is because you don't want to be the test case that proves whether there really are software patents in Brazil. Secondly, you live in a world where other people are scared of software patents and will change behaviors because of it. Thirdly, software patents affect customers of Brazilian businesses. Fourthly, startups in Brazil will want to become startups internationally. And then fifthly, well, there is something going on out there, which is harmonization. This is your second cat picture for the day. And this wasn't the slide that was originally, the picture that was originally up there. So I don't know if you remember, once upon a time here at Fisley, do you remember that Brazil had a pioneering new copyright policy? Do you remember that you had copyright law that was going to be equitable and fair, that was not going to allow big corporations to tax small musicians? Do you remember all these things? It happened once upon a time, and then you got a new president. And Dilma got a new culture minister, Ana de Hollander. And Ana de Hollander was a representative of those music industries who were going to lose out. And she blew away your great copyright law. And you discovered that actually you woke up one morning and all that progress you'd made, all that safety you had gone away. Well, you've now got a new culture minister, Marta Suplicy. And she is a career politician who is responsive in Dilma's government to international pressures. And you know, the US has got a trade representative who is going around the world negotiating trade policies. And what that US trade representative did in Australia, for example, was go to the Australians and say, would you like to export your minerals, your iron ore and your uranium to the US? Oh, you would? Or harmonize your IP law, and then we will make a trade agreement with you. And so the Australians did that, and now the Australians have got software patents. And those same trade negotiators are constantly knocking on Brazil's door. And there is every chance that you will discover, either under Dilma, or next year you will probably have a new president. Maybe you'll still have Dilma. And something could happen to that patent safety you have. You can't rely on not having software patents here. You need to be taking action to protect yourself from software patents because they're going to become real one way or the other for you. So what can you do about software patents? So just to be clear, you've probably picked up that we are very skeptical about software patents. We think they are a bad thing. I've campaigned against them in the European Parliament. Deb has spoken out against them in various roles, including working at Free Software Foundation. But unfortunately, they are real. They are a real problem. So what are you going to do about it? Well, imagine these are all of the patents that threaten your software, this big red triangle. There are a number of defenses that will help you to protect yourself against patent threats. The biggest and easiest protection you can have is to use open source software licenses for your free software. And by the way, I use open source and free software interchangeably. That was my talk at the beginning of FISLAY, because I don't think there's any difference. Free software is open source. Open source is free software. We're all fighting on the same side. If you use a modern open source license like the GPLv3 or like the Apache license or like the Mozilla license version 2, within the license there is language that makes sure that all of the participants in the community have to respect each other and not start patent attacks. And most of the patents that read on an open source project have been filed by the participants in the project themselves, because of that parallel filing effect that I told you about before. So one very important defense is the open source license. Software under an open source license has got all of the patents created by the participants in the community licensed to one another. The second important defense is what I call scorched earth, or what Deb more properly calls defensive filing. This is where, as you are inventing things, instead of filing patents, which, trust me, you don't want to do, filing a patent costs a great deal of money. The estimate at the moment is it will probably cost you something like 200,000 rei to file a patent. And you don't want to do that. For that 200,000 rei, you can make at least 10 defensive publications. That's taking your great idea, writing it down, and having it put into a database so that the US Patent Office will not allow patents to be filed about that idea. And you can scorch the earth around your project by making defensive filing and by participating in the Linux Defenders project, which Deb will tell you a bit about in a minute. Then the next defense is non-assert covenants or open standardization processes. If you use open standards in your free and open source software, you will typically find that the patent risk has been exposed already in the standards committee. And all of the, or most of the threats that can arise will have been documented. You will often also find that the big companies involved in those standards committees would have made promises not to assert their patents against software that implements the standard. So, for example, when I worked at Sun Microsystems, we made a patent non-assert covenant about the open document format, so that you as a developer could be sure that the company that had done most of the work in open document format and probably held most of the patents had no intention of using them against open document format. So non-assert covenants and open standards processes protect you. And then finally, patent pools protect you. A patent pool is where a group of companies collaborate together to bring all of their patents into a place they can share them, and they can then begin to protect one another. And Deb is going to tell us more about that in a moment as well. All of these defenses all the same. You'll notice there's a little piece of red triangle still at the top. You cannot defend yourself against all patents. It's just not possible. Patents are not fair. They are not rational. Somebody can make a patent on an idea. You can independently invent the same idea in your source code, and the patent then reads against you. You can unknowingly infringe a patent. In fact, as a developer, you probably should only ever unknowingly infringe patents. You should never read patents to find out whether you're infringing anything. If you wonder whether your software is infringing any patents, let me save you some time and give you a rule of thumb. Yes, you're infringing about 5 patents for every line of code. So don't worry about it. All software is infringing a truckload of patents the whole time. Open source software is no different. All proprietary software and all open source software is constantly infringing a truckload of patents. And that's why you need the sort of protection you get from a patent pool. So Deb is going to tell us about Open Invention Network.
Thanks. Not only is searching for patents to see if you're infringing a bad idea, it's also painful. The USPTO website seems to be on dial-up, circa the movie War Games. So I don't recommend interfacing with their website at all. The open six companies that use GNU Linux and have built a lot of business around that. And at some point they realized we would rather not sue each other because we share code and we share all these other things. So let's all agree to not sue each other, the six of us. So that's nice, but as you've seen, like most of the patent policy in the US has arisen from case law. So what happens is that a company that really has like Red Hat or Novell in its sights would sue a smaller company like TomTom that doesn't have any resources to fight on patent infringement. So then that case law or the courts look at that particular patent and think, well, that company rolled over and accepted that that was a real patent, so it must be a real patent. It makes it more real in the court's eye. That causes a problem because then that patent holder goes and sees like, well, who else can we shake down for money with this patent? So we opened up the pool and said, like, let's have everybody come in and not sue each other. So it's two things. It identifies to you community members and projects that are opposed to suing each other around Linux, GNU, Android, and a number of the development tools that we use to build those projects. It also means that you have a defensive resource if you get that letter that you can use. So you have a free cross-license of all of the patents in that pool. We want more companies to join. We also want to build a bigger store of defensive publications. So Simon talked a bit about defensive filings, Scorched Earth. Obviously, you know, because we're sharing code and we're sharing functionality, the defensive filing is a thing that we would like to also see done as a global community so that when we're inventing things, we're adding it, we're letting the U.S. Patent and Trade Office know this. If you see this again, it's not new. Don't issue a patent on it. It's already been invented. So OAN will help you with a defensive filing if you want to do that. And if it's a one around Linux, GNU, or Android, we'll absorb the cost and help you with that. And let's see, we have just a little bit more, and we're getting towards the end.
So I'm going to ask you, Deb, how many licensees are now part of Open Invention Network?
We have about 500, I think, is the number.
So it's about I think it might be even get up to 550 now.
550. Oh, you looked at Ed's last email and I did not. Okay, 550.
And how do you become an OAN licensee? What does it cost?
It's free, and you can ask Simon and I about it.
Yeah. Thank you.
And no more lawyers if they don't have to. So I would like to see free software. So I hope that you will join us in that idea. We're going to go to questions. Do you have more leading questions?
Well, I was going to sum up the talk.
Oh, yeah, you should do that.
Yeah, let me sum up the talk. So here's what we've told you. So we've told you that software patents are real, they exist, and they are a growing international problem. We have told you that there are no good software patents, there are just bad software patents and very bad software patents. We have told you that there is a exponentially growing problem in companies being attacked with software patents, either as a mafia-style model to shake money out of people, or as an anti-competitive weapon to shape markets by weaker competitors who nonetheless have got a patent archive. We've told you that we think Brazil should care a lot about this, and we think that Brazil should care a lot about this, first of all, because getting certainty is expensive and you don't want to be the first person. Secondly, because software patents kill the development environment. Thirdly, because Brazilian companies want to be internationally successful, not just successful in Brazil. Then because in the international environment, the US trade representative is using trade negotiations to try and spread software patents in other countries. By the way, the reason they're doing that is they couldn't make software patents fully legal in America. And so what they're doing is they're trying to make countries like Brazil adopt software patents so that they can then go back to the US Congress and say, oh, we need to harmonize with Brazil. It is one of these circular attacks that is going on. We've told you that there are things you can do to protect yourself against software patents. You can use modern open source licenses, not old-fashioned ones like BSD and MIT, but modern ones like GPLv3, because those will give you more protection. We've told you that you can invest in defensive filing to make sure that your technology area is one where it's very hard for other companies to get patents because you have published all of the know-how and made patents almost impossible to file in the US Patent and Trademark Office. We've told you that using open standards makes you safer because much of the patent landscape is exposed in the standardization process, or there may even be a non-assert covenant. And we've told you that you can join a patent pool. You can join OIN. It's free of charge. All you have to do is promise not to attack people with software patents. And if you haven't got any patents, we don't mind. You're still free to join and join the Defensive Non-Aggression Pact. So that was the full talk, and we thank you very much for listening so patiently to our English spoken so fast, and we would welcome your questions.
Yep. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So there's a question at the back up there. There's a microphone coming to you. Holding it in a neutral position in front of us.
Hi. There is a group, organization that has been fighting against patents in the area of codecs for many years, SHIF.org. Is there any collaboration between the OIN and SHIF.org? Do you know SHIF.org?
It's SHIF.org. Is that the organization?
Sorry for the... My subtalk.
That's okay.
Does that answer? Yeah. Question here.
Hello. Good night. I read in the news the other day that the American government was going to start an analysis over the so-called patent trolls. I believe I read this like last month. Do you guys think this is going forward? Or?
I think that's where you're going. I
can have a go with that.
Yeah,
So yes, I do think that's going to go ahead. What I think is happening here is I think that the big patent-holding companies. Remember that IBM and Microsoft each make an eight-figure sum of money or more from their patent portfolios every year. And they do it silently. You never read about it because they approach people and they tell them that if they want a license, they have to sign a non-disclosure agreement so that they can't talk about their problem. You've heard of Fight Club. Well, the first rule of the Patent Fight Club is no one talks about the Patent Fight Club. And so there are a lot of companies that make a lot of money out of software patents, and they do it silently. And those companies end up paying a lot of money themselves to patent trolls. And so they have been encouraging the US government to pretend that the whole problem is patent trolls. And those companies have been encouraging the US government to take action over patent trolls. And my big fear is that the government will actually do something about patent trolls and will then pretend that the whole problem has been solved. So yes, I do believe something's going to be done about patent trolls. And I think that it's going to probably make the situation worse rather than better, because it will actually allow Microsoft, IBM, the pharmaceutical companies, and other companies that engage in patent hostility as a means of market control to continue doing all of those things unregulated. Deb.
Yeah, I do think that the patent troll problem is much bigger. I think it's also a bit of the public perception as well. Like, when the average U.S. person reads about a patent suit between two very large companies, they don't see a problem. The amount of sympathy that Bill Gates inspires in people is pretty small. They see two guys who each have like 20 mansions duking it out for an amount of money that means nothing to the average person. So whereas the patent troll problem, I think people see, wait, this company isn't doing any work, and this company is. That's not okay. So it's a lot about, and I think that the public perception of the problem is going to make it much easier to get something done about patent trolls without doing anything about anti-competitive suits.
Okay.
More questions? Oh, time's up.
So time is up.
All right, on to the beer. Thank you.